Good afternoon, gardeners. You're listening to Garden Planet with Selena and Karen. Now, today we are going back into our archives and we are going to carry on with the history of gardening. Now, if you missed our last show where we talked right from the beginning up to Roman times, you can catch that episode on the Garden Planet archives at planetaudio.org.nz/garden-planet. So that's where you'll find all the archives of our old shows.
Don't forget the hyphen.
Yes. All right, Karen, so?
So where we got up to was Roman times. Now, I just mentioned how we're talking about like a typical, like extensive villa gardens that the wealthier Romans were into.
Mm-hmm.
It being a place of peace and solitude away from all the war and pillaging and whatnot that was going on outside.
Okay. Karen, just give us a timeline of when this was.
What century was the Roman Empire?
Around the first century.
First century.
AD.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
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 The time of Christ. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so Christ had just been born and the Romans were in full force and it was all highly political and
yes.
They were becoming a very strong empire. Now, it is curious, though, to mention that although the Egyptians and Romans both gardened with vigour, the Greeks not so much so. I couldn't find much on that.
Interesting.
The Greek history of... They did apparently put gardens around temples and they adorned the walkways with statues, but...
They weren't so into it,
as
the Romans were.
The pleasure gardens that demonstrated wealth in other communities is seemingly absent.
Maybe they didn't have that great soil in Greece.
Hmm.
Because it was quite rocky terrain.
It is rocky, and it's almost, I don't know, my geography's pretty bad too. Is it almost a lot of coastal land around Greece, eh?
Yeah.
A lot of the Greek islands and whatnot. So that is, that is not easy land to grow. That's probably the explanation there, right there. Thank you, Selena.
Okay.
Now, moving on, around the time of the decline of the Roman Empire... and a separate horticultural tradition formed in China, which was transmitted to Japan. And it took the form of aristocratic gardens featuring miniaturized natural landscapes centered on ponds and whatnot, and Zen gardens featured at temples.
Yep.
So that was around that time.
Yes.
Which I thought was interesting. I like those gardens. I like the...
And so that's where the tradition of bonsai would have come from.
Mm.
The little trees and the little pots.
Yeah, so I've seen like that one at the Hamilton Botanic Gardens.
Lovely garden.
And yeah, it's just got everything. I really enjoy it. And the little trees that have been like sculpted and rocks.
The rocks that represent mountains.
Yeah.
And the ponds represent the lakes. So they're trying to recreate that whole landscape in a garden.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's neat.
Yeah.
So that was, around the fall of the Roman Empire that started. Now we're at the time of the Middle Ages or the medieval period. This is between the 5th and 15th century. And this is the beginning of, correct me if I'm wrong, the Renaissance period.
Yes.
The fall of... So I didn't never took history at school.
Are you...
So apparently, am I getting the... Around the fall of the Western Roman Empire, it was the beginning of the Renaissance era.
I would have thought it would have been the Middle Ages and then the Renaissance.
And then, okay.
Yeah.
Right. Or maybe it sort of started merging towards the end of the Middle Ages then. Okay,
yeah.
Cool. That makes sense. In the early Middle Ages, it was in the monasteries where advances in gardening came to be, interestingly.
Mm-hmm.
The monks cultivated herbs, fruits, vegetables, and developed sophisticated horticultural techniques. Generally, the monastic garden types included a kitchen garden, an infirmary garden, cemetery orchard, a cloister garth. That's a word that Do you know what that is?
Cloister. I know what cloister is, but not sure what
it's you know, like when you've got like a courtyard and you've got like those arches that go around the outside of it.
Yeah.
That's apparently what that is.
Okay.
Yeah. I should have just probably written courtyard or something. But anyway, I just thought it was such a fun word I had to put in. Vineyard and possibly a plot of grass and trees where horses could graze. During the later Middle Ages, European cities were walled for internal defence and to control trade. Though space within these walls was limited, there were animals, fruit trees and kitchen gardens inside the city limits. Grass, at this point, was first noted in the medieval garden, and fruit trees were prevalent and often grafted to produce new varieties of fruit. So we're starting to really get into the gardening now.
Yeah. And
well, gardening that we know anyway.
Yeah.
Then post-medieval time in Europe allowed for the rediscovery of antique Roman villas, because I guess they were, you know, allowed to sort of roam the lands again and came across, you know, oh, look at this. So there's a sort of rediscovery of all that Roman villa gardens that we were talking about earlier. And then a new form of garden was created, and this was called the Italian Renaissance garden, which is probably towards the end. So this became the dominant horticultural style in Europe until the 18th century. Would you agree with that? Do you know much about the Italian Renaissance?
I haven't really been to those places.
I have.
You have.
Yeah. Just to let you know.
Okay.
Leave it with me, Selena.
All right, you're the expert.
So anyway, the Spanish Crown built the first Renaissance-inspired public parks of this era, and the renowned French classical garden also took inspiration from this form of garden. The spectacular gardens of Versailles, which I've been to, they're super cool. Although proportions are much larger than their Italian predecessor, are one such example.
Oh.
Have you heard about these huge?
Just vast.
Yes. And this, I'm sorry, guys, the science has had to come back. Okay, here we go. Listen, I thought it was really interesting, this. I was telling my fiancé about it, and he was really interested too because he's of that mind.
Okay.
So it may appeal to some, this information. René Descartes.
Yes.
The founder of, did you know that name?
I learned a bit of philosophy.
Oh, well, get this.
Yeah.
This is more about maths and philosophy.
Okay.
Or a bit of a...
Go for
the
it.
Founder of analytical geometry. Did you learn that in philosophy?
We learned a lot of logic.
Hmm. Believe the following, quote, "All movement is a straight line, therefore space is a universal grid of mathematical coordinates, and everything can be located on its infinitely extendable planes." Unquote.
Oh.
Those are his... René Descartes.
I can imagine him saying that. He was very analytical and wanted everything just ordered and logical. So, yeah.
Yeah. So this belief gave rise to Cartesian mathematics, which is what I'm quite familiar with from my trigonometry days and calculus and whatnot. Ugh. Thanks for that, René.
Oh.
Anyway, but useful stuff nonetheless. The French classical garden is symmetrically aligned to perfection using the Cartesian grid format. So you go, if you're blessed enough to go and see these gardens of Versailles, you know, mm-hmm. classical, they do. It's like
looking at a maths book.
It is. Yeah. Beautifully put. This coordinate system and corresponding philosophy provides both a physical and visual representation of Descartes' belief.
Right.
Isn't that cool? I liked that. I got a buzz off this little particular part of my... And this style also epitomises the monarch and clearly displays man's domination and manipulation of nature to show his authority.
Mm, I've seen pictures where, you've got all these avenues of... Mm. Trees, straight lines.
Heaps of hedging.
To the horizon.
Yeah.
Huge hedges of, boxes.
So the idea was to have the home or the mansion or the castle or whatever. In this case, I think Versailles is a palace or a small palace.
It's huge.
In the centre, and then all these points, all the gardens would go off from it.
Yeah.
And then so that you're looking at it into the distance, the horizon looked like it would be going forever.
Wow.
So there was, quite a
mind-blowing.
Yeah. And so that was interesting. I'll just put that in there. Hopefully someone found that of interest. Look, I suppose this would be a good time for us to bring in the plant of the week.
Oh, yes, our plant of the week.
Of all the saddest words that I have ever heard, the saddest is a story told me by a bird. You'd spend about an hour.
Now, our plant of the week is the beautiful rose. Now, the rose has been cultivated for over 5,000 years. So, that slots right into our history lesson.
Yeah. Would have been a wonderful in the classic gardens too that we've been talking about.
So right from Pompeii to the ancient Egyptians, the Romans, the Chinese, and we're coming up to the French, they all have cultivated roses. The Romans, for them, the rose represented courage in battlefield. So it wasn't until a bit later they also associated the rose with the goddess of love, Venus.
Mm-hmm.
And the early Christians also revered the rose because it represented the Virgin Mary.
Oh,
and,
okay.
Yeah. And the rosary is actually dedicated to her. So the rosary is a series of prayers hailing Mary. And I think it's to do with the rose being Mary's flower.
Oh, right.
I'm not quite sure about that because I'm not the kind of Christian who says rosaries.
Yeah.
But that's what
that's interesting. Because I always thought a rosary was that thing that they used to it's hold like, during the those prayers.
So it's a like a bead.
Okay.
And then they say the prayers.
And do the beads resemble roses?
I'm not actually too sure about that.
Because I thought it had something to do with that, or maybe there was some sort of resemblance to the rose and that. But it's that. It's to do with the Virgin Mary and her being associated with story.
Another thing, the rose represented in history, did you know there was actually a war of roses?
No.
In the Middle Ages in Britain, the royal houses, there were two houses. One was called the House of York and one was called the House of Lancaster, and they each had roses representing their two houses.
Oh, I do know that the English have a lot to do with,
There was a civil war, apparently, but it was not that they were fighting each other with roses. But if you were wondering what the War of Roses was, that was just that time in history.
Because it was like their emblem or their...
Yeah, their emblem on their shields. So,
Oh, interesting.
As we learned that the Romans... rose represents courage in battlefield.
Yeah.
So they had those roses on their shields.
That's really interesting.
It's interesting flower power.
Because when you hear of the English rose, I mean, I'm half English.
Yes.
And when someone says, oh, you're an English rose.
You're tough.
That's what I always thought they were meaning. Oh, you're so sweet and you smell nice.
No, you're prickly.
Oh, my goodness.
You can draw blood with your horns.
Well, I get it. Fine.
The French love roses too. There was an empress called Josephine, and her garden is still on show today, and it's just full of roses. She collected them.
Wow.
So they went crazy over roses.
Yeah.
And they were the ones that were to start breeding all the different kinds that we have today.
Oh.
So there are
very relevant to our timeline.
So many different varieties of roses, so many colours, and of course the fragrance is unbeatable.
Mm-hmm.
So you can get different types of roses, and if you go crazy, you can grow them all, but I wouldn't recommend that because they are very high maintenance plant.
Okay, right.
So maybe just have one or two. I know it's so hard to choose, but just don't go overboard with your roses.
So do you reckon it's like some of these new sort of genetically modified or, well, not even that, like, you know, like special breeds that are a little more fussy?
Yes, or... I think... So what's happened with the rose used to be quite a simple flower, okay? Mm. It was like an open flower. It didn't have all the bells and whistles that roses have today.
Yeah.
But then they started breeding them for different purposes, like for the vase, they wanted long stem roses, they wanted more colours, they wanted double flowers and bunches instead of just single flowers.
Oh, okay, okay.
So they started breeding them more and more, and that's when they become more specialised.
Okay, because I have seen roses that are more open, and it's almost like, oh, is that a rose?
Oh, yes.
And then it's... Yeah, that is a rose, because I'm so used to seeing the kinds that you can get in a florist that are just like the special breeds that are like tightly budded or in a bunch or whatever,
Okay, well, those vase roses, they bred them especially, and they called them hybrid teas for the long stems and the tightly budded, just so that you can cut them and give them to your Valentine. Okay, but the old-fashioned roses are the ones that we might know a bit more as the more scented ones, the ones with the amazing fragrance. Mm. The problem with the old ones was that they only flowered once a season, whereas in newer varieties they can keep flowering. Mm. More, they've got more flowers, more
I think
colours.
I've got an old rose on my property, and I just leave it. I've never sprayed it, and it just... hangs around, flowers, but only one, not as regularly. Yeah. Actually, I think I've got, I'm going to show you.
Okay.
Yeah. Next time it's. And do all roses have thorns?
No, you can have thornless roses. One that I used to look after was the Banksia rose.
Mm.
It's a climbing rose, but it doesn't have thorns.
Wow.
So there,
was that bred to be like that, or was it just,
it was just
one
like
that's
that.
Like that? Yeah, yeah, okay.
It's got a little yellow flower.
I'm going to have to talk to, who was the singer that sang Every Rose Has a Thorn?
Guns N' Roses.
Guns N' Roses, yeah. Well, I have to write to them, put them right.
But yeah, Guns N' Roses. You'd think, oh, why Guns N' Roses? Well, that battlefield symbolism.
Yes.
So, yeah, roses aren't that just sweet and lovely.
I've
They're quite
so much
tough.
Today.
Okay, so some of the different roses you can get your climbing roses, your bush roses, your flower carpet roses, standard roses. There's so many different kinds. But if you were to choose, you just want think of where you're going to put them, because they like full sun, and what you're going to do with them. Like, are you going to grow them for the vase, or do you want
to... I really like the climbing roses when they're done nicely over a
They make
archway.
A good archway like, or hedge or on the side of your house if you've got quite a sturdy house.
And keep the, and they go and they can and they will keep the burglars out too.
Exactly, because no one's going to go climb a rose and get thorns stuck in there.
No thanks. Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah. So if you want to look at some roses, you don't particularly want to grow them, you can head to the Parnell Rose Gardens in Parnell.
Yep.
Or the Auckland Botanic Gardens and have a look, see what they have there, and ask them what they would recommend to grow in for your garden.
I'm reading a book, a New Zealand book at the moment. I'm not sure. I think it's based on a real story. But and it mentioned the Parnell Rose Gardens just the other day, and it's based in the 40s. So those gardens have been around since, I guess, the beginning of Auckland. Wonder if they've got any old heritage roses still in there from those days.
Oh, they must do. Off to the side of the Parnell Rose Gardens is a Nancy Steen garden, and that's Nancy Steen was an Aucklander who was dedicated to finding all these old roses, like pre 1940s that were growing, because she was concerned that the new breeders were kind of losing the old style of roses.
Yeah.
And they were breeding them, maybe they were breeding them too much. She didn't want to lose those old varieties. So she researched that and wrote a book about it.
Okay.
Yeah.
And she's actually got a garden there.
Yes, the garden there is dedicated to her.
Oh, cool.
And it's a wonderful cottagey garden with roses, but also all these other flowers. And spring is the best time to go and see that.
All right, then. Cool.
Yeah.
Thanks for that. Put that on my to-do list. Anything else there we need to add? Or
Well, I had a bit about maybe caring for the roses you already have. Mm-hmm. The listeners might want to know a few tips.
Yes, please.
Okay, so around this time of year, the roses are coming into bloom. Excellent. So they might need a bit of feeding.
Yeah.
And they love bananas, would you believe? Banana peels.
Oh, yeah.
Because of the high potash content.
Okay.
So anything that's got high potash, like comfrey and seaweed and that kind of thing.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And please mulch them, and the mulch they prefer is pea straw.
Mm-hmm.
Gives them a good, keeps the roots moist and protects them.
Yep.
Yeah, make sure they have plenty of sun, so the roses will sulk in shade.
Okay.
So be careful where you site them.
Yeah.
And they don't like to be too deep in the soil, so make sure they're a bit raised up.
You know this old rose that I think I've got on my property? We're going to have to clarify that. We'll let you know, listeners, if it is or not. It's actually just growing in the lawn. Like, it's got grass growing around it, so it gets weed-eated around it.
Okay.
But and it's up against a fence, so basically doing everything wrong, you've just said, because it's not getting, it's like tall fed, so it's not getting much sunlight. But it's grown tall to avoid, to get the sun.
Oh, yeah,
so,
it'll grow toward the light.
Yeah.
And another tip is just keep picking your flowers, and roses love to be dead-headed, they call it, regularly, and then they'll bloom more.
Yeah.
So don't just leave your flowers on them. Cut them for your vases. Use the petals for your potpourries and make rose water out of them. Use your roses. Don't just leave them there.
Yeah.
And they'll reward you with more, and they'll keep blooming until the end of autumn. So,
do you have any particular, wow, they bloom that long, any particular favourite breed or flavour-roos?
Flavour-roos?
No. I'm just trying to be fancy. Any particular, I don't know if it's breed is the right word. Like, I'm thinking
variety.
Like model. Yeah, I was thinking model, but model. That's like a car.
One that's just particularly tough and disease resistant for our Auckland gardens is iceberg.
Oh, yeah.
And that can climb on, it can also be a bush. Beautiful white rose, that one, and scented. So
is that why they call the iceberg lettuce the iceberg? Because it's tough and it's light-coloured.
It's because it's white.
Yeah.
Like an iceberg.
Yeah.
Graham Thomas is also one that does really well. It's a yellow one. Beautiful scent. And as I mentioned before, the Banksia rose. Now, the one old-fashioned rose that you can try and grow, I haven't really seen grown in many Auckland gardens, maybe because it's hard to find, is the Rugosa rose. Very tough, but the fragrance of the rose is beautiful. And when they go to seed, when they start growing fruits, the rose hips, you can use those.
Yeah.
And it's rose hip tea or something like that.
Oh, nice.
Oh, and one more to
put
mention.
Put them in your bath.
Is the Mutabilis rose. Now, that one is a rose that changes colour. So it'll sort of white and then turn to pink.
Oh, that's fancy.
Yeah.
Well, I was only expecting like maybe one or two, but you were saying, oh, I'm not really into roses. I've got nothing much to say. But you're going to have to eat your words
and
now,
and
Selena.
Another tip is when you're pruning them or cutting them, make sure you wear gloves.
Definitely. Yeah, I know. I can say that with a number of plants, though. I just wear gloves all the time now, just in case. It's a good practice to do, gardeners.
Wow.
Just always wear gloves. Find a pair that you like. Stick with it. And another thing I'd suggest is get, like, at least two pairs so that when you're washing one and drying it, you've got your other one.
I've got snazzy bamboo gloves.
Oh. I found a pair that a brand that I like and stick with. Is yours the bamboo?
Yeah, I think they have a nice soft feel to it, but they're also rubber covered. So they do protect your hands from getting snagged and whatever and else.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for that. That's interesting and helpful. I just wanted to say one of my favourite roses, which I really enjoy, probably more so the colour of it, the appearance rather than the smell, is the Crimson Tide variety. Mm. It's a beautiful, beautiful purple rose, big rose. Stunning. Really like that one.
Crimson Tide, okay.
I've looked out for it because I loved it so much and I want to get another and I haven't seen it once. But a nice, good, like, velvety purple rose is just, like, really quite special. That's just my... Anyone that wants to give me a rose out there?
Hint, hint, hint.
Right. So, shall we move on to...
let's get back to our history.
Where were we up to? I'll tell you where we were up to, Selena. We are up to the Industrial Revolution.
Okay.
So, time's really ticking on now.
Yeah.
The years of the Industrial Revolution had an influence on gardening too, would you believe?
I believe that.
In Europe, by the end of this revolution, which is around 1840, that was actually when my Danish ancestors... Oh, no, hang on. That was the signing of the treaty, wasn't
it? That's right,
yes.
1840.
Britain's forest industry had shrunk to the point of barely existing. Isn't that disgusting?
Mm.
How much damage we can do. The Garden City movement response brought urban garden planning into industrialised areas in the 20th century in order to offset the negative industrial effects of this time, especially pollution. Woods were often planted around homes and coppice planting became popular practice. I've been into England and seen a lot of woods around homes. It's quite cool. Kids can play in them and it's nice. And it just sort of gives you a bit of separation from wherever. So, coppicing, you know what that is?
It's when you grow the trees and you keep cutting them, but they're still growing.
That is correct.
Is that right? Oh, excellent.
3 points for you.
Yeah.
It basically what they do is they'll thin them out. But obviously trees that will go back from that.
Yeah. Stump.
It's either roots or stump. So that's what that is. And so that was became very popular practice. And then they'd use the trees for firewood or whatever you use them for. So they'd actually do that and then thin it out at the same time and you've got a constant supply. Also during this time, I don't think I'm going to mention that controversy. There was two styles of garden becoming prevalent. The classic, I am going to mention it now, I'm doing it. The classic manicured garden and that of the picturesque style garden, which incorporated a more untamed beauty, which is probably what my garden is.
Mm-hmm.
And then it seems the picturesque style may have gained a foothold because by the 19th century the romantic cottage garden was much in vogue. And this is more of an informal design.
Yes.
So that's probably my grandparents.
Yep.
And from here, influencing proponents of the wild garden and perennial garden.
Mm-hmm.
And that has probably... Have we got time to do one more or should we finish up there?
One more, we've got 2 minutes.
All right, we'll finish up with just where we're at today.
Yeah.
Modern gardens became all the rage, form following function. So it would sort of follow modernism of architecture and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, form following function means following the shape of an object should primarily relate to its intended purpose.
Oh,
so you plant according to your building
or your yard. Fill our driveway.
And finally, 21st century backyard gardening, it seems, has taken a back step as the digital age and modern living takes a hold.
Oh, no.
That's what I feel. I just don't think there's the love of gardening that there once was, so certainly not within my circles. You hang around a lot of gardening people. A lot of people don't bother. But those that do, sustainable design practices are all the vogue these days.
Yep.
Green roofs.
Indoor gardening,
water harvesting, things like that. So I'm just saving our planet one garden at a time.
Yes.
So here we are today.
Today.
Pushing on forward.
We do have our special guest in our studio right here. It's tree tomato seedling.
Do you know what a tree tomato is, listeners? No one's answering. It is a tamarillo.
That's
what I learnt.
Okay, next week, tamarillos.
Yep, definitely. Plan of the week for next week. Tune in.
Listeners, happy gardening and... Yeah, that's our garden history.
Awesome. See you guys.
Bye. Happy gardening. Well, thanks for listening, everyone. That's all we have time for. Come back next week for more great gardening tips at Garden Planet. You can find us on Facebook on our Garden Planet Facebook page, or email us at gardenplanetfm@gmail.com if you want to ask us anything about gardening. Happy gardening, everyone, and we'll be back next week.